Good evening, and I'll echo Brother Jason's comments that if you're visiting with us, it's so great to have you here, and that you made time to come and worship with us and study with us. We find that very encouraging that you're here with us. And as you mentioned, we are studying and going, making our way through the Psalms, and we had sent out a reading, and there's some specific psalms to focus on tonight. We found it's hard to when you're making your way through the Psalms to find that time to devote to every single one that might be on the reading list for that particular week. So we usually get through one to three. Hopefully, I'm optimistic. From the selected reading. But the Psalms, just kind of to bring us back, are Israel's hymnal. Within it, we find theology, history, indications of the future. Psalms means praises in Hebrew. Most of them were set to music. We don't have a lot of indications of much about the music that accompanied any of the particular psalms. There are some clues, but not very much. Written by David, and we'll most of the psalms that we've gone through so far and the ones we focus on are Davidic psalms, but not all of them are written by David. Asaph, the sons of Korah, each written 12. Solomon has two. Moses had one. But the Psalms, the book itself, is really broken out into five books. But we won't have much of an impact on our study because we're taking and studying individual Psalms as a kind of a singular unit. There's a lot of diversity in the Psalms, as we'll see tonight. They cover a lot, especially the ones that Psalms of David, events in his life that inspired him to write them. And so you kind of have to understand what's as much as you can or what's was going on in his life. We see him opening himself up to God. Nearly every human emotion is presented to God and expressed to God. And so I find it encouraging in my study of the Psalms to read that and see that because it gives me permission to bring everything to God and to lay it at His feet. And when I'm struggling with things in this world, and I'm grappling with my things that, when I get sinned, when people have sinned against me, when I'm dealing and faced with wickedness and persecution or things are great in my life, the Psalms, you can find a psalm, you can find words that will help you express that in those emotions and find encouragement to know that there are others, and thousands of years ago, God's people struggled with the same kinds of concerns and issues. And so I hope that you'll find the same type of encouragement. One thing we know when we go through our study, once you understand the translation of the words, then you dig into it and try to understand what it means, but always keeping in mind that it is poetry, it's artistic word expression, and so you have to kind of keep that in mind as you're going through it. There are truths to be learned. There is understanding about the nature of God that we can learn from our study that is God is consistent. God doesn't change. He is and he's always has been. And his love and his righteousness is something that we can count on, can always put our trust in him, and that never changes. So tonight, I thought we would start in Psalm 58. We're not going to go in necessarily numerical order as we go through. But I wanted to start there. In Psalm 58, verse 1 says, "Do you indeed speak righteousness, you silent ones? Do you judge uprightly, you sons of men?" So this psalm is an imprecatory psalm, and I guess I should have prefaced that first. So it speaks, the beginning, it speaks to the influence of the wicked, and then it goes into a plea for divine judgment against the wicked. And we haven't discussed an imprecatory psalm yet together. So I thought I would attempt to do that. It's difficult sometimes because it's not necessarily how we think. And we don't pray prayers of condemnation on people, typically. It's not something that we do. But we'll discuss what's going on here as we make our way through it. So there's some difficulties, I think, with the first verse in translations. The King James says that David is speaking to you silent ones. And with the NIV, we have an NIV. Can you read what the NIV says? Possibly. I think the NIV simply says rulers. Other versions say mighty ones. I think the ESV says, "Oh gods." But I think he's speaking about, though, the rulers of and the judges, those that governing body, governing authorities. And it seems to be like he's condemning them because they're not speaking out and performing their jobs in the way they should be in a righteous way. I don't know if anyone else has a different interpretation of that or what that could mean. That's the understanding that I kind of took away from it. So there are those governing rulers or judges who are not saying the things that they should be saying. They're speaking evil. They're not speaking out when they should. Or they're keeping quiet when they should be speaking out. And verse 2, he condemns them pretty straightforwardly, I guess, or pretty deliberately. It says, "Know in heart you work wickedness. You weigh out the violence of your hands in the earth." Some versions say, "No, you practice injustice in your hearts. With your hands you weigh out violence in the land." So David is declaring that the rulers are failing to accomplish their God-given tasks. He has a problem with them not being righteous and doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's very clear, and he's speaking out against it. So it kind of gives us, it made me think about how we are to react when those that are in positions of authority are not speaking out or doing the things that they should be doing, or perform, or wicked, or are evil in their governing. So I don't know if there's any thoughts on that, or if you guys we're able to think through that as well. But I'd be interested in your thoughts.
Hey, Brad, I would say that even broader than that, like anyone who's speaking judgment against God's people, anyone who's claiming to decree what is right, and so it might not even be a governing authority, but people who will speak ill of God's people, speak ill of righteous people. There's a lot of what we've done now, people just break the teeth in their mouth.
Any other thoughts on that? There's concerns for the use of judicial power, and I mentioned this in the questions that I sent out throughout the Old Testament, our misuse of power and corruption. And we saw that in Jesus' time as well, corrupt rulers. And so there was always, Jesus called out the hypocrisy and the corruption as he knew their hearts. Paul gives us more of a description of the purpose of government that I thought we would just take a quick look at in Romans 13, verse 4. If you flip over there. Romans 13, verse 4. Somebody would like to read that.
For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil.
So that's within the context of submission to the government, our governing bodies, those that were appointed over us, and so we have a duty to live peaceably and submit. But there was a reason for the creation of governments. God had a hand in it, and it's I think it's made kind of clear in that verse that government is to be God's servant for good, because it has a sword to wield, to use. It's God's servant and an avenger that brings wrath on those who do wrong. So with regard to our role and voice in speaking out against wickedness that may be occurring in our own government, is there an example from this psalm specifically, taking it within the context of New Testament scripture as well, what is our role then with regard to addressing the wickedness and evilness that may occur? And I don't know that.
Pray for their destruction. So I think this is a case
Yeah.
An interesting thing about this psalm is, of course, it's God's anointed king who's complaining about corrupt rulers. And so, as David is having these challenges where he's being oppressed by those who are not upholding God's will in their office, he knows he's the anointed. You have to think this is impressing upon him that he needs to uphold justice. He needs to be a righteous ruler when he assumes the kingship that God's established for him. And so, I mean, I think what we can understand from that is we can see injustice done by others. Mm-hmm. And I think it's right to pray that God bring about justice. But it ought to encourage us, our response should be to personally commit ourselves to being just and righteous and fulfilling God's purpose, God's will for our lives to be just and righteous people. And I think, David's life later, he probably wanted to rule to be the king God wanted for his people, and not like Saul and not like those rulers who he's complaining about in these Psalms.
So I grappled. I appreciate your thoughts. I grappled with that as well. He still was praying to God and laying it at God's feet. He was praying for justice and righteousness and expressed the confidence that in God that justice would be done, and that God is righteous. And so whenever I see that, I know that God, through grace, I'm saved. And I know that those that are not, that haven't obeyed the gospel, and aren't living righteously, are not, and will be judged by a God who is perfect, and so I can pray that all will come to know God, but I also know that those that don't come to know God will be judged righteously, fairly, by a perfect God who can do nothing less than that. And so in verses 3 and 5, it starts to show how evil the rulers are. We get a sense through the language here. In verses 3 through 5, the wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they are born, speaking lies. Their poison is like the poison of a serpent. They are like the deaf cobra that stops its ear, which will not heed the voice of charmers, charming ever so skillfully. So from that, these verses, you get a sense that the people that David is talking about or speaking about have been wicked their whole lives, been liars from birth. Comparing them to venomous cobras. So cobra is obviously a very dangerous snake. But more dangerous than the normal cobra, because you get a sense that these are cobras that can't be charmed, they can't be controlled. So I get a sense that they lack control. They're not in line. So if something could be dangerous but be under control, it makes it less threatening. But when it is loose and slithering around and not doing what you need it to do, it's much more dangerous. And they're not listening to what other people say. They're acting in accordance with their evil ways, regardless of what they need to be doing. So there's also we get a sense that at least I took away from it, that there's a danger here that we don't conform to the character of those that are in the positions of authority over us. And it's dangerous, and it's something that that Israel grappled with. When they would have a righteous king, things were going good and the people were obeying, but then when a bad king would come along that wasn't righteous, that was wicked, then there was a certain amount of backsliding or struggling with you, if you will, with that. And it was threatening mainly because they lacked that type of that leadership that was necessary to keep them righteous. And so our king, we have our king, and we know who we follow, and that is constant, regardless of who is in charge and what country we live in and the rulers and the type of government that we fall under. But the threat of the world and of the whatever governing authorities we may be under, leading us astray is there, and it's very real. And I guess it's no different than just guarding ourselves from the world. But we have to seek out righteousness and justice, and everything that we do, regardless of who our leaders are and what they're espousing. So in verses 6 through 11, we get into a plea for divine judgment that I already alluded to. And so let's read 6 through 7. Break their teeth in their mouth, O God. Break out the fangs of the young lions, O Lord. Let them flow away as waters which run continually. When he bends his bow, let his arrows be as if cut in pieces. Let them be like a snail which melts away as it goes, like a stubborn child of a woman, that they may not see the sun. Before your pots can fill the burning thorns, he shall take them away as with a whirlwind, as in his living and burning wrath. The righteous shall rejoice when he sees the vengeance. He shall wash his feet in the blood of the wicked, so that the men will say, surely there is reward for the righteous. Surely he is God who judges in the earth. So knock their teeth out. And I love that verse, not because I like MMA or anything like that. I like it in that if you go and you keep reading, there's a parallel verse there that I think gives a little more context. And I think we can read into it that the taking out of the teeth or the defanging is taking away their power and their bite and their ability to inflict damage. And so I think that to me, that the poetic type of language there is what David's getting at. They have power, but he's asking for God to take that from them because it's not, they're wicked. In verse 7, we see another unique way of, or unique image of what he wants to happen to these rulers. In verse 7, it says, let them flow away as waters which run continually when he... and some versions say they will vanish like water that flows away. We know water has great strength. Hurricanes cause massive destruction. When flooding happens and rivers overflow and they wash away homes, they take things away and you never see them again. They disappear. They're washed away. But then the water eventually recedes. and goes back to normal levels or completely dries up. So David's calling for God to make these rulers flow away. Make them blunted and headless arrows. Different versions have different ways of describing this kind of unique image. The NIV says, when they draw the bow, let their arrows be blunted. New American Standard says, let them or their arrows be headless shafts. So basically, David's asking them to, or God, to dull their weapons, to dull their attack upon the innocent, is what he's asking for. As far as our prayers go, I can't see why we couldn't pray that if there is wickedness being done on someone that's unjust, that power for that to happen would be taken away. But in all things, God's will be done. And then there's some talk of a slug. So there's a type of slug that I read about in that region that, as it makes its way in the heat, it would actually melt away as it moves. So I'm not sure if that's the type of slug they're talking about. As it gets far enough along in the heat, it's just a shell and it's gone. So David uses a picture of that, of watching a snail move across that way. It'll leave a trail of slime as it's dissolving. So the rulers are like slugs. And he prays that they'll melt away because of their unjust acts. And finally, we see some talk of that the end from the beginning. So if we read, like a stillborn child of a woman, that they may not see the sun. So he's wishing that they wouldn't have been born. It'd have been better if they would have never been born in the first place. Which is pretty harsh language. It's pretty difficult to take in. But this was a song that they sang. And I think, and what's great of a study of the Psalms and seeing David, he was near to God. And the closer we get to God, the more we see his righteousness and his perfection, the starker the contrast of evil is. And the more it should offend you, the closer that you get to God, that evil and sin, it's something that you, as you draw near to God, becomes something that's less tolerable. And so I think this is David expressing that in a very, very poetic and but visceral type of way. And God can't have nothing to do with it. And so David is there experiencing it, knowing that this is so offensive to God. And it's because of that, it's offensive to him as well. I think we just see it kind of playing out and being expressed in a very, very poetic and but very kind of raw way. But the final verses of the psalm speak of David's confidence that God will bring about justice. That justice that has been lacking here. We see that he's expresses hope that the wicked will be judged and the righteous will be rewarded. But it seems that he recognizes that justice would take some time. It's not something that's immediate. But it will come. And God will eventually sweep the wicked away. In verse 9, as I mentioned, we see that it's being described in very very chilling terms. But we see there, the righteous shall rejoice when he sees the vengeance. He shall wash his feet in the blood of the wicked. In verse 9, before your pots can fill the burning thorns, he shall take them away as with a whirlwind. God is, or David is, using some very vivid imagery to describe the living and burning. The whirlwind there is something that he's using to really portray what we're up against and what the wicked are up against, rather, and we'll have to deal with. So let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 9, verses 1 through 6. Do you consider how God conveyed this to the people of Israel? Deuteronomy chapter 9, verses 1 through 6. Deuteronomy 9, verses 1 through 6. Somebody want to read this?
Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today, to go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than you, cities great and fortified up to heaven, a people great and tall, the sons of the Anakim, whom you know and of whom you have heard it said, who can stand for the sons of Anak? Know therefore today that he who goes over before you as a consuming fire is the Lord your God. He will destroy them and subdue them before you. So you shall drive them out and make them perish quickly, as the Lord has promised you. Do not strain your heart after the Lord your God has thrust them out before you. It is because of my righteousness that the Lord has brought you to possess this land. Whereas it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is driving them out before you, not because of your righteousness, but the uprightness of your heart, are you going in to possess their land. But because of the wickedness of these nations, the Lord your God is driving them out from before you, that he may confirm the word that the Lord swore to your fathers, Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Know therefore that the Lord your God is not giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, for you are a stubborn people.
Yeah. So, there's some similar language. We turn to Hebrews chapter 12, verses 28 and 29. Hebrews 12, 28 and 29. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably and acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. Those that are wicked will be burned up and taken away in a whirlwind, as the psalm says. There is a God that loves us so much that he provided a way to be reconciled to him, but for those that are not, there is a sure destruction. As sure as we can have an assurance of our redemption, we can have that exact same assurance in the destruction of the wicked. So we have that promised kingdom, that promised land, but we can't ever think that it's because of our goodness that God has given these blessings. God told the people of Israel that they didn't receive the land because they were righteous, but because the people that lived there were wicked. God was going to consume them for their wickedness with great destruction. The writer of the Hebrews says that we also need the grace of God. It's by that grace of God that we live and are not consumed by our own wickedness. But we have to continue to serve God acceptably with reverence and awe, or else we'll be swept away with the wicked in the consuming fire or with a whirlwind. So coming back to Psalm 58, David goes on to say that the righteous will rejoice when the wicked fall. The wicked will be repaid according to their deeds. And see that graphic picture in verse 10, that the righteous shall rejoice when he sees the vengeance. He shall wash his feet in the blood of the wicked. That's a very graphic image that it should conjure up in your mind. But it's one of a conquering victor walking through the bloody battlefield as the slain lay around and blood is spilt all around. And it's the picture of God's successful campaign against the wicked. And it should strike fear in those that are wicked, but also provide assurance and hope to us in that final hope that's expressed in verse 11. So that men will say, surely there is a reward for the righteous. Surely he is God who judges in the earth. So we got death and taxes, those two things that we can be sure of. And God's judgment, can add that to the list. So Psalm 55, I need to transition to something different as a palate cleanser from that, if you will. There are plenty of those. But it's not really, because it's, again, dealing with some pretty weighty, a pretty weighty topic. Psalm 55 deals with a very painful experience that David had to endure, the betrayal of a very close friend. He's been betrayed by someone that's close to him, someone that he worshiped with, that he worshiped God with, that betrayed him in a deep way. And that's something that could be very relatable to many of us who, if we've ever suffered betrayal by someone very close to us, or a breach of confidence, a breach of trust. And so it's a great psalm to go to see and read and see the emotion that David went through to deal with that. And it begins the first verse 1 by pleading to God to hear his words and listen to his prayer. And it says, give ear to my prayer, O God, and do not hide yourself from my supplication. In the NIV it says, hear me and answer me. So David isn't bemoaning the things he's enduring in his betrayal. He's going to God with them. And he's making at the very, very beginning here his request, his petition to him. It seems, because he's He says, and do not hide yourself from my supplication, that he may feel abandoned by God. Or at least that's how he feels. And he's wounded from the betrayal. So he wants to go to God, and he wants God to draw near to him. And he wants God to be there with him. And that's something that we see repeatedly throughout the Psalms, where we see David going to God first, making that appeal, making that connection, that's a great example for us and for whatever we face, for whatever difficulty we may come across. And the second part of, I guess, with beginning a part of verse 2, it says, attend to me and hear me. And it says, I am restless in my complaint and moan noisily. And then in verse 3, because of the voice of the enemy, because of the oppression of the wicked, for they bring down trouble upon me, and in wrath they hate me. And in verse 4, it says, my heart is severely pained within me, and the terrors of death have fallen upon me. So verse 4 begins the word pictures that describe his desperate situation. And we see words like anguish, terrors, fear, trembling, and horrors. But, like we sang tonight, he said in verse 6, oh, that I had wings like a dove. I would fly away and be at rest. So David wanted to run away. He was hurting. He was in pain. And he wished he could get away from that pain. And he was going to God and expressing that to God. And we know that running away isn't the answer. When we're hurt and when we're struggling, the answer is to go to God. But that doesn't take away the pain. And that doesn't take away the damage that has been done to you. God can. But acting on that impulse to just leave and abandon the situation that you're in isn't what God wants. He wants us to bring our petitions to Him, lay our cares and our concerns and our struggles and our pain at His feet so that He can address it and He can heal us. So I think we're about done, and I don't want to go over. And we obviously could continue and go on, but I would just say, I appreciate your attention, your thoughts. There's so many psalms that we can go to, that can strengthen us, that can encourage us, and it's difficult to sometimes study them in this way because they're meant to be sung. They're meant to be meditated on, and so I encourage you to get in them. Find the ones that are encouragement to you. Be familiar with them, so when you need them, you can go to them and have them be that source that they were meant to be. Thanks.